the final second round series that's going to get going is going to be the Clippers versus the Rockets. I'm Brian Gibberman from the Podium Game Podcast, here again with Law Murray from ClipperBlog.com. Law, how you doing?
I'm feeling great this morning. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, no problem. What was it like watching Chris Paul that Game 7 against the Spurs?
I think that legacy talk with Chris Paul has been a defensive topic for the Clippers team especially. Doc Rivers has tried to basically say, you're not supposed to be talking about legacies and defining legacies when a player hasn't even turned 30 yet. But this was just a legacy-defining game. I think that it's going to be Chris Paul's going to be looked at unfairly 10 years from now. It's like a guarantee. We're not going to appreciate his outstanding play during the regular season, and he's had great postseason games before, but this was the greatest moment of his career, and I don't think that's hyperbole. I mean, not just because he was injured, but even without the injury, he played outstanding basketball against one of the greatest defensive teams of our generation. From the three-pointer to end the third quarter, that was from the Staples Center logo on the floor, to how he controlled the game against a future Hall of Famer and Tony Parker, how he controlled the series, and then for him to hit that shot, he had to beat Danny Green from near midcourt, okay? And he had to launch a shot over Tim Duncan's legendary wingspan, and it banked in. It was the whole sequence, the whole series, the whole game was incredible, and then on top of it, he might miss game one because of the hamstring.
I have no rooting interest in Chris Paul or not, but I was happy for the dude just watching what he's gone through. By the end of that, towards the end of that series, I didn't really care who won, but by the end, I kind of pretty much found myself rooting for the Clippers just so Paul could move on and hopefully some of that legacy stuff can kind of quiet down now. I think a couple people were talking about, it's really pretty simple. Paul's a great player. He's a great postseason player. He had one really bad postseason moment against the Thunder. I mean, it kind of comes down that to me there, and it's really not all that complicated besides that.
Right.
Overshadowed because of what happened with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin had a freaking triple-double in that Game 7. He might have been the best player in the first round of the playoffs when you look at everything in totality. I mean, how good has he been playing?
You know, the narratives were frustrating 2 and 3 years ago for him, too. And this was as critical for Griffin. Again, keep in mind, I'm especially not caught up in the whole legacy or defining narrative crap either. But I think the urgency for this LA team was clear from the beginning of the season. I feel like people didn't enjoy watching this team play, and Blake was a centerpiece to it. They were like, Blake's taking too many jumpers. Is he hurt? Is he coasting through the season? Does he care? Do Kramer and Chris like each other? And I think the kind of series Blake had, he had monster lines all over the place. This wasn't even his first triple-double in the series, but it's going to be the first that they remember because Blake didn't have the critical turnover at the end of the game. Blake didn't have the horrible finish to game five where he missed damn near every shot that he took. You know, he did have foul trouble in the first half, but Blake finished this game. He helped finish this series. He complemented, you know, the outstanding performance Chris Paul had with an outstanding performance on his own. I actually thought Blake got hurt at the end of this game. When Chris Paul hit that shot off the top of the window, Blake went and grabbed the rim. He missed it, grabbed a piece of net, and fell on his shoulder. But I haven't heard anything come out of it. So I guess he's all right. But again, Blake had two triple-doubles in the series. He grabbed double-digit rebounds in every game. This is a guy, Blake, regular season. You know, talk about DeAndre Jordan leading the league in rebounds. Blake didn't have a notable season rebounding. He had double-digit rebounds in every game in the series. Stepped it up defensively. He still can be inconsistent on that side of the floor, but he's in outstanding shape. He played 40 minutes in every game except the Game 3 blowout. And he bullied dudes. He pretty much rendered Aaron Baines useless after dunking on him three times in Game 1. When he gets to the free throw line, and he's still feeling that jumper, and he's still facilitating the action in the middle of the floor. He had 5 assists in every game, at least 5 assists in every game. I feel like he's a kind of player who, without shooting threes, is a matchup nightmare at the power forward position. That's hard to say in 2015.
And then after missing those 2 clutch free throws in Game 6 to come back in Game 7 and knock down 10 of 11 was really impressive. All right, enough looking back. Maybe we are here to look forward into what's going to happen with Clippers-Rockets.
Right.
Now, unfortunately for the Clippers' perspective, as much fun as watching Spurs and them was for us, I think that was probably the worst possible thing that could have happened to them. I mean, this is a beat-up and battered team right now after a rough 7-game series right that. How worried are you about the Clippers' health and the minutes and all that stuff going into the second round?
Well, it's unfortunate for the Clippers that obviously Chris Paul had the hamstring, but the Clippers are playing with, I'm concerned, the Clippers are playing with house money, you know? I mean, you'd rather be if you're the Clippers, you'd rather be like, oh, well, Chris has a hamstring than saying, well, the season's over and we have a bunch of critical introspective decisions to make. The Clippers have not played a game without Chris Paul this year, but in the last few years, they've had to play without Chris. So there's that. The other guys are healthy, except for, I mean, Glenn Davis played with a sprained ankle, and it's Glenn Davis. Like, the guys, you're not counting on Glenn Davis to play 30 minutes in any game anyway, and he looked pretty darn good in Game 7. So you're not worried about Glenn Davis. You're not worried about Crawford, who missed a bunch of time. He handled 32 minutes in a Game 7 and played well for the first time in a while. So you're not worried about him. And the rest of those guys are relatively young, or they're Matt Barnes, another guy who, because there's Jamal and J.J. Redick, you're not, like, saying, hey, we need you to play 48 minutes or whatever. They're, except for Chris's hamstring, they're healthy. They sit now. So I don't think it's a huge deal. It's the playoffs. It's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be tired a little bit at this point in the season. It's May. So I think it's a bit overstated. I'm not too worried about it.
Redick, during the regular season, gained a reputation as a guy who defended Harden pretty well. Do you see that being sustainable into the playoffs?
I do. I think James, I mean, let me get on my soapbox for not a long time. I thought James Harden was the most valuable player in the NBA this season.
Well, do you really? Did you really?
I did. And that's no knock on Steph Curry, because Steph is absolutely deserving. The Warriors had a special season, and I mean, I'm excited for Steph. Like, I think he's the most fun point guard to watch since Steve Nash was winning back-to-back MVPs. So I look at James Harden, and I look at the fact that his starting lineup missed so much time. 2 guys who started a majority of the games won't even play this postseason. The guy who was the most reliable piece of the lineup for most of his season was playing in the Eastern Conference last year, Trevor Ariza, and Harden League to score 2,000 total points this season. He people love to share his videos of horrible defense. He stepped it up this year. The Rockets were a top 10 defense. The Rockets are in this position because James Harden was, to me, the most valuable player in the league. They got the second seed in a conference everyone loves to tout as, you know, one of the most loaded and lopsided in professional sports. That being said, the Clippers have not just J.J. Redick, because this is not a one-on-one matchup here. The Clippers as a team have done an exemplary job of defending James Harden over the last several seasons. The Rockets, they've won the last two matchups with the Clippers. Even with that, James Harden has struggled. He's really struggled against the Clippers. And it's been the three-point shooting that he struggled most with. So, as a team, the Clippers are going to do a good job here. I think that's the matchup of the series, James Harden versus the Clippers team. And Dwight did not play a single game. I'm sure we'll get to that. Dwight didn't play a single game against the Clippers this year. I'm not sure that that's going to help James Harden too much, that he's on the floor. I think that helps the Clippers shrink the floor a bit on James. So I think it's worth checking out. The key matchup for the Clippers, they're going to run him off the three-point line as much as possible and make him uncomfortable and crowd him. And if James turns the ball over once a quarter, I think it's going to affect the Rockets' offense in a big way. That's the matchup of the series.
I'll disagree with you on one point. I think having Dwight there does help him, because when, like in the regular season, when it was one game, they started the Monty Eunice, Terrence Jones. I know Joey Dorsey played in a couple of the games. Maybe Tariq Black was there. I'm not sure if he was there or not. I don't have all those box scores up in front of me. But what Dwight can do is he can help get him going in that pick-and-roll game. And then he might not be a good shooter, but his gravity dive into the basket for those alley-oops will create a little bit more space for Harden than maybe he had in the regular season, because you can't disrespect him on rolls like someone you would with Joey Dorsey, because he's much more of a threat as a finisher.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally understand the impact Dwight's going to have. I mean, I think Dwight's going to have a positive impact on the Rockets in general. But the Clippers, like, they've seen James Harden and Dwight. They've seen them, and they've made them relatively ineffective. So what I'm saying is, it's going to allow the Clippers to get guy is around James. Even in the pick and roll game, they're going to the basket. And I think the Clippers are going to feel confident in James being uncomfortable getting easy open looks on the perimeter. And if that's the case, then I think the Clippers win that battle.
I think one of the keys is going to be how Josh Smith can defend Blake Griffin. I think that's going to be an interesting matchup to watch. See if he can do a the Spurs put a lot on his plate. On just the way they defended it led to Blake being in a position to be a playmaker a lot. I wonder if Houston takes the same sort of strategy and they're trapping Chris Paul as much and letting that, like, the 4-on-3 develop behind them, or if they try and play it a little bit more straight up. But they don't have anyone really to guard Paul. If Paul's healthy, be his best. This is a series that not having Beverly could really hurt them.
Right. Not having Beverly's going to hurt. Expect to see a lot of Trevor Ariza on Chris Paul, like in a Kawhi Leonard role. This is why Houston went out and got Chandler Parsons. It's worked out perfectly. Ariza is one of my favorite defenders in the league, because not only is he long and athletic, but into the foul trouble and the mistakes that kind of junks things up for the physical archetype of the 3-and-D guy that you want at small forward. Trevor's been transformative even for Houston. Like, what James does offensively on the perimeter, Ariza's, again, been a perfect complement. So don't expect to see... I mean, the Rockets are going to do the same thing with their point guards as the Spurs did with Tony Parker. They're going to hide, you know, Prigioni and Jason Terry on someone like Matt Barnes. And Ariza's going to be matched up with Chris Paul often in this series. Now, the key for the Rockets on defense, Utah Griffin and Josh Smith, Blake only got to play one real game against, I guess you got to say two, because the last one was in March, and that was Griffin's first game back after a five-week absence from the elbow surgery. And then Blake handled a lot of minutes. It was just literally his first game back. And Blake was a little passive in that game, but at the end he got a little too aggressive and he picked up some critical, he had some critical turnovers. So the Rocket, we've seen this look before as far as what Houston is going to do to defend guys, but the Clippers are going to have Blake fully healthy, fully locked in, knowing exactly what he's able to do. In the only game where you got the real Blake Griffin against the Rockets, he gave him 30 and 10 and it was a blowout. So I think this is a Blake Griffin series for the Clippers. Even with Chris Paul's health, the key is going to be, can Blake dominate inside against a matchup of Josh Smith, Terrence Jones? He'll see Dwight Howard at times.
You sound like a person pretty confident LA is winning the series. How many games you picking them in?
You know what? I don't know if I would call that confidence. I mean, the Rockets are a very good team, and they did split the season series with the Clippers. They are, even with Mota Yunus and Beverly not available, they're still somehow deeper than the Clippers. so this is going to, I feel like this is going to be another seven-game series, and I feel like the Clippers can win this seven-game series, though. I think it can get down to another game seven, and I think the key matchup is going to be, and I hate saying this in the playoffs, but it's going to be the threes, and it's going to be, can James get free? He's handled so much time. James didn't miss time this year, okay? This is as big a series for James Harden as anyone else. It's like, hey, look, you haven't, the Rockets, they won their first playoff series with James. Now, how far can they go? And the Clippers they know how predictable the Rockets are. It's not about predictability with them. It's whether you can stop it or not. Dallas wasn't able to. I think the Clippers are going to be able to come up with some great game plans and not let one guy beat them. On the other end, I think the biggest key besides Blake is J.J. Redick. Because someone's got to guard him off the ball. And the Rocket, I mean, this is going to be big on James. Can James chase JJ around? And, you know, James is going to be handling the ball a lot, playing a lot of minutes, driving a lot, trying to create a lot. It's going to be a battle for James. If James can handle it, then outstanding. But I think the Clippers are going to wear him out. Leave him inefficient, and if Blake gets going and he gets some key shooting from guys like J.J. Redick and Jamal Crawford, I think that they can surprise in Houston in a game seven.
I was thinking this through. Harden's a better on-ball defender than he is off.
Right.
I almost wonder...
That's always been the clips with him. If you look, the criticism with him has always been him falling asleep off the ball. He picked it up this year, but J.J. Redick is going to be a challenge for him off the ball. He's going to work extra hard.
So I wonder if... I think they're going to hide him on Barnes to let him rest up for offense a little bit. I wonder if then when he's not on Barnes, if you put him on Paul instead of Redick and let Ariza chase around Redick a little bit. So you're keeping Harden defending the ball instead of having to worry about him off ball.
They can certainly do that, and it's not going to be something that they're going to want to do for anywhere close to the majority of the game, because even a hobbled Chris Paul, and especially if he takes a game, he misses a road game in the series. I mean, even a hobbled Chris Paul, as the Spurs found out in Game 7, is not over, because he's so smart and so calculated, and he'll... I mean, James Harden's going to have to still work extra hard to get a leg up in that series. So, but it's going to be hard. And even Clippers, This is Doc Rivers' Clippers now. That means that Chris Paul is as effective off the ball as he's been in any point of his career. You got guys who are going to be able to facilitate, like Blake Griffin, and then James, even if he's off the ball guarding Chris, he's got to watch out for the fact that Chris is shooting the three better than ever. He's able to move without the ball and be effective offensively. There's not going to be a whole lot of rest for the weary, and especially if Matt Barnes can hit the three. If Matt Barnes can hit the three, he shot better in the last few games of the Spurs series. People hate Matt Barnes, but Matt played well. If Matt Barnes shooting the three well again, it's a huge deal for the Clippers.
You got anything you want to plug before you get out of here? Let people know about.
Yeah, we're still covering this series. Clipper blog is still up, so you know check us out through affiliate, and you can follow me on Law Murray the New on Twitter. I'm looking forward to a great series.
Law, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And that wraps up the HPN Podium Game Podcast Conference Semifinals previews. We'll be back with the Western and Eastern Conference Finals when that stuff comes around. Thanks, everyone, for listening.